You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My guest today is Denise Dinger. She is the cover subject of my story in this week's Las Vegas Weekly. Dinger is an icon of the Las Vegas fitness community, a champion amateur bodybuilder, and coach to many athletes. Today, we'll talk about her story, about fitness, and about public health issues. She joins me now on the phone. Thanks, Denise, for joining us.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Good, thanks. Denise, you have a pretty remarkable story. You weren't born in the United States. Tell us about that and how you wound up here in Las Vegas.
Yes, I was born in 1962 in South Africa. And my dad was a producer of shows, and I started dancing at the age of 3 years old. I studied under the best choreographers in South Africa, and by the time I was 10, 11 years old, I was sponsored to come to America to further my studies in singing and dancing. So in 1973, I arrived in New York City and then ended up in Los Angeles. I was about to work with Bobby Darin, and unfortunately he passed away. So we had to just continue making a living, and at that time we moved to Las Vegas in 1976. And continue my dance career in Las Vegas, of course, along with my parents.
And tell us about your career in Las Vegas. You encountered some issues that a lot of dancers do with eating disorders. Tell us about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So, and then I went to UNLV, and I was a dance major out there. Excuse me, and at about the age of 17, because I went to college at a young age, you needed to keep a very small frame, and unfortunately, as a dancer, you're always in the mirror, and one of my choreographers told me I needed to lose weight, and that's kind of when it all started.
Is that something that choreographers today would still say, or is it understood that that would be a dangerous thing to say to a young woman?
I think sometimes it's an underlying understanding when you're on stage, especially as a professional. There's a certain image that you have to have. I think now that it's more in the open and the public, that a full-figured woman is a little more acceptable. But I still think there's that element where they want the woman to look lean because it's just more appealing on stage.
Uh-huh.
Back in my day, there was really not a whole lot of education about nutrition, you know, and how to keep that body and be able to be an athlete and keep a lean body.
So when your choreographer told you that, what did you do?
Well, I figured out that I could eat and then binge and purge. And then I would purge and go on stage and keep that lean body. And unfortunately, it turned into a habit. And by the time I was 21, 22, it definitely overtook my mind. The binging and the purging, because you just never feel good enough. You know, I need to get a job, you gotta have a certain look. And so the disease just kind of took over, unfortunately. You know, by the time I was 21, 22, I was full-blown bulimic.
But at the time, though, you were high-functioning, we might call it. You maintained a career that was still going. Tell us about that.
You know, funny enough, bulimia is probably one of the diseases that it's out there way more than people realize. And it's insidious. It's an insidious disease. And girls can continue because, I would just replenish my body at the time in order to function, you know, before it would kick in again and the behavior would start over. And I would function just fine. Unfortunately, I would have stomach aches, my throat would be sore. There were all these telltale signs. However, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, it was taboo, you know, not like today, the girls can really reach out and get some help.
So
I actually found a way to do it, and I turned to methamphetamine and cocaine, which would help me just not eat at all.
So you use those as appetite suppressants?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because I could never really perform my best, you know, but for some reason, I wouldn't eat and purge. So it was the only way I could deal with it at the time.
So then you were stuck with kind of co-addictions.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now during this time, you were, tell us what you were teaching dance. You did aerial ballet, right? Tell us about that.
Right. I was at Circus. I got a job at Circus, doing aerial ballet. I toured with Kira DeSpina on a show called Magic. And, then I got a job at Circus doing aerial ballet, which went for about a year and a half. And at the same time, I was doing preschool teaching. So I was in the industry, you know, my whole life was consumed with dancing. And at the same time, dealing with my disease. So I think at one point I got myself down to 89 pounds, 90 pounds when I was at Circus. And
let me note that you're 5 foot, right?
Yeah, I'm 4'11", actually.
Uh-huh.
And that went on for a good, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. And then I conceived my first child at the age of 24. I was with that gentleman for a good 10 years, Jenny's father. And then when I conceived her, I found a picture of Rachel McClish, who is a bodybuilder, and I really, really liked her look. And so, which was the beginning of me kind of figuring out how to eat right without hurting myself. It was the beginning. So there was hope, you know, at the end of the tunnel.
Because in order to be a bodybuilder and achieve that look that you hope for, you realize that there had to be food involved.
Correct. And if I didn't eat, I couldn't lift. Mm-hmm. So it was good. And then I got ready for my first competition when I was 28, I believe. So I was in the gym for a good 3 years lifting weights. And after having a daughter, I really didn't want to go back out on the road and dance. So I just switched careers, and I ended up being a personal trainer. And I was still in the gym, you know, teaching, which I've been doing since I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good because there was a way that I could learn to eat. And for like 5-6 months, that behavior didn't exist. Because I would eat and I would train and I would eat. I'm like, oh, there is a way. You know, so it was the beginning of my recovery. There was a glimpse. But it still took until I was 34 until I absolutely went into a program to deal with all my cross addictions.
What was it that got you, that pushed you over into recovery finally?
Oh, it was after my third daughter. I was sober through all my pregnancies. And after my third daughter, as soon as I had her, I went right back to using. And about 6 months into it, my husband, who I'm married to now for 20 years, Craig, he could see there was a problem. And he said to me, it's either a mental institution or a drug test. And he loved me to death. He didn't want to see me hurting myself anymore. So I picked the mental institution. And I went to the mental institution, and I pretended I had bipolar. And little did they know, I was doing meth and staying up and drinking to go to sleep. So I just had an addiction. And after about a month of seeing a psychiatrist, I broke out because they put me on lithium. I broke out in these big hives. I just asked, could I just try Benadryl and AA and recovery? And he said, absolutely. And I'm going on 16 years now being clean and sober.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Now, you've kind of, you've been a personal trainer through that time, but you've kind of done it all in Las Vegas. You were a cocktail waitress. You had a nutrition bar. Tell us about that a little bit.
Sure. So I think I was about 21 or 22 when I started cocktailing. And I've also done, I've been a camera girl. My dad owned a photography studio here at the Portrait House for a good 15, 20 years. So I kind of branched out into photography for a little bit. And then also always having my dance background, I was always in the gym, you know, on and off. And then after I had my fourth child, I decided that I really didn't want to go back to personal training and I didn't want to go back to cocktailing. So I designed a health bar, which is called Dendy's Health Bar, which Las Vegas knows very well. And we were nationwide within 5 years. I was all over everywhere. I designed the product myself. It was an all-natural product, which was a cross between oats and protein. And it was kind of the beginning of the low-carb phase. And then, unfortunately, 9/11 happened, and business was tough. But I stuck it out for about 3 more years after that. and then we bellied up in 05. And I ended up walking away with $80 in our pocket, and Craig and I had to go back to work. And I just went back to what I do best, which is personal training. But I learned a lot about nutrition within that 5 years. It was great. And it really brought my husband and I very close, very close. Was
so,
going through the war.
Right. A small business will do that, I'm sure. So then you end up back in as a personal trainer, and now you have, between the two of you, you have something like more than 36 clients, right?
Absolutely.
How have you kind of fine-tuned your training techniques over the years? Some of your clients, they compete in bodybuilding competitions. Others do not. Tell us about your training philosophy.
Well, over the years, being a competitor myself since pretty much I was born, I've always liked the elements of the stage. And I think after watching the bodybuilders, the female bodybuilders back in the 70s, the 80s, they were kind of manly. And I wanted to bring the femininity kind of back to the stage. And that's what got me competing. And once I started competing, it takes your body to a whole nother level. It's very, very intense. And I think through my own experience with competing and taking the body to the next level, not just physically, but it's mental and it's a spiritual experience, I started to share that. But really what changed everything is having people watch my body change. Because I went from bodybuilding, powerlifting, figure, and back to bodybuilding. And all four looks are completely different. My nutrition is different. My training is different. And it's appealing to people watching somebody else change. And just over the years, more and more people have asked me more questions, and it's just evolved into what I do. And I love it. I love the stage. I have a great eye for physique because of my dance background. And then with my nutritional background, I'm capable of taking a body and actually looking at it and changing it. And now with the programs we have, I can actually fine-tune it with calories and fats and carbohydrates. And then at the end, after their water depletion, and get them on stage looking their very, very best. Whether they win or lose, it doesn't matter. But I think taking somebody's body from 0 to 100, it's very impressive. And the girls love it. They just love it.
Give us a quick primer on how you do that.
Well, we start off with X amount of calories, depending on the girl. We'll do a fat, we'll do an intake, which will be their fat testing, their weights and their measures. I'll look at where they're at and what I think they need to be. And with that number, I can take a number. Say, for instance, their body fat's at 20%, and I'm looking at maybe trying to take them down between 12 and 15. My computer will tell me about the calorie intake they need to get there. So then off of those numbers, I will design a program, a diet, gearing them towards that over a period of 12 weeks. So, for instance, say we start them off at 2,200 calories over a period of 12 weeks. I can take them anywhere from 1,200 to 1,400 calories by the end, depending on their physique, with taking food away and adding cardio. And along with, of course, weight training, which is anywhere from, most of my girls train 3 days a week. So it's a process.
Our listeners might be asking themselves, you're someone who's dealt with eating disorders, and you describe this calorie regulation. It sounds dangerous. How do you make sure that this is actually in your client's best health interests?
Well, that's a very good question. So the structure of this diet is very difficult. So these girls will come in, and they're very structured. And it's the post-shows that is very difficult for them. Because what happens is when your body has to come back to normal, that's sometimes when the danger part starts. So you're dealing with a girl with, for 12 weeks. I've gotten to know them intimately. I've gotten to know their personalities, and they've gotten to know me. I have no secrets, as you can tell. They need to know my story. They need to know the dangers. And the danger is when you come out, you have to go back to a normal way of life. However, they will be changed forever. And I say that because now you know what foods can do to your body. So what? So what I'm trying to promote is a healthy lifestyle. So even if my competitors, because it's not the healthiest thing, obviously, depriving yourself. But when you're coming out of it, as you come out, I bring them out slowly. I give them a post-diet. They stay with me. They still got to do their cardio, but just not an intense. So now we have an off-season. And an off-season is still a season. And in that off-season, that is when your body truly changes. That's when you can put muscle on. That's when you're more relaxed. That's when you can go out. You can eat a little bit more. And that's when most of my changes are happening. So if Michael has a bad off-season, when we start to do a pre-contest season, it's harder. And it's not for everybody. You know, some girls will do one show, they're done with it. You know, they just go right back into their normal lifestyles. And some girls struggle with it, and that's absolutely true. And that's where I can really help them out. You know, I believe they came to me in the first place because of low self-esteem. Some come to me because they're just competitive in nature. And at the end of this 12 weeks, you know, my job as a life coach is to have them have a more fulfilled life and a better understanding of themselves. And 99% of the time, that's what I'm accomplishing. Every so often, we'll have a girl that, you know, goes a little sideways, but she'll always keep in contact with me, and you know, she'll come back around. So,
and let me,
that's the pleasure.
What I found striking is that when I talk to your clients, for them, and you've said this too, it's really more than physical fitness. There's a relationship between fitness and the way our brains operate. Tell us about what you've discovered in that area.
Well, I think as far as that goes, there's a couple things. You can look at an individual, and you know, they say this all the time when someone goes to have a job interview. You have a person that doesn't really take care of themselves. Maybe he's a little heavier on the, you know, a little bit heavier. And you get the person that's better groomed, just looks better. And for some unknown reason, society looks at them as if they're put together better. Now, you know, give or take that, I don't know. However, not everybody loves exercise. I think at the end of the day, if that person just feels better about themselves by doing something physical, mentally, you just feel better and you're stronger. You release certain endorphins, which converts to dopamine, which is actually a calming hormone, and you just feel better. Your overall look on life is just more positive. You feel better. You've released endorphins. You've cleaned your blood. You've got flow going through. You've got energy. And I think in their daily living, they just have a better outlook and they're just more positive. And that's what I find. I know personally that's what I get out of exercising. And there's many days I don't feel like doing it. But at the end of the day, I just feel better when I work out. And it's also preventative from, you know, heart disease, diabetes. You can go on and on with that.
Right. So. What do you think are the biggest obstacles to fitness?
The obstacles?
Obstacles, yeah. Why are so many people sedentary? Let's put it that way.
Because it hurts. It's painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not fun necessarily to lift weight and get uncomfortable. Most of us live in a microwave world. You know, we want our food instant. We want money instant. We want to take a pill. We would do liposuction. We'll do anything but diet and exercise because it's uncomfortable. Got to prep your food, which takes extra time. Got to make it to the gym, which takes extra time. It's uncomfortable. That's all there is to it. I mean, we would rather sit on the couch and eat bonbons. I mean, who wouldn't? I would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I could look like this and sit on the couch and eat bonbons. But it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And I say that to them all the time. Do you really feel like lifting weights today all the time, feeling uncomfortable? No, it's afterwards. You know, that self-satisfaction when you're walking, when you're driving home, you're like, wow. And then you see your body start changing and changing and changing. Then this shift really happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mind shifts. It's a complete shift. Then you start looking forward to your workouts because you know the results are happening. So I think in the beginning, it's uncomfortable. That's really what it is.
Give us some tips about fitness without being competing at the level that you're competing at. And maybe this is not a question for you, but what are some easy basic things people can do?
One, drink water. They need to drink at least 8 ounces of water a day. Two, get rid of all saturated foods. Stick with healthy choices as in fresh fruits and vegetables, nuts, whole grains, lean meats. You're going to feel 10 times better. Stay away from any artificial sugars, as in aspartame, sucralose. You want to stick with stevia, or funny enough, raw sugar is a better choice. You're going to feel better. Also, I mean, number one is your diet. 80% is what you eat. 10% is your training. 3 days a week of lifting is efficient. Get your cardio in. We're looking at 30 to 45 minutes at least 4 times a week. You can find something you enjoy. Classes, spin, swimming, playing tennis, anything that keeps you moving. There's so many choices out there today. My philosophy is all exercise is good exercise. Just get up and move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just the basic. Get your rest, 8 hours of sleep. Try and go to sleep at the same time and wake up at the same time. Minimize your alcohol intake. It's a poison. It dehydrates you. If you're smoking, try quit. All the basic things that I think as a society, we all know this. This is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of applying it. And I think that's really the hardest part. Find a partner. Get up, find your best friend. Go for a walk. Find a mate that enjoys doing a certain sport. Take your kids for a run. There's a million things people can do to at least get themselves moving.
Mm-hmm. You're not a nutritionist exactly, but you certainly advise athletes and you're a personal trainer, so I think you have some credibility. I mean, tell us why you think that we have such extreme public health problems with astounding rates of obesity and then the healthcare effects surrounding diabetes and heart disease and so on.
We're a lazy race. We're just lazy. Because it's just so easy to drive through somewhere. People got to work. The cost of living. You're looking at mothers and fathers. I have 4 children. We got to work. We got to support our children. We got to put food on the table. Who feels like getting up 2 hours early or after work going to the gym? And it's just easy to drive through it. We live in a world of convenience. So we really have to get out of our comfort zone and go an extra mile. And unfortunately, that always happens when someone either had a heart attack or they have high blood pressure or their ankles are swollen, and then they make that conscious decision to change. It's sad but true, and I understand. I come from both sides. I'm married for 20 years. I have 4 children. It's just very difficult to get out. It's almost like having 2 jobs. So I say just keep it real minimal, even if save some money, it'll maybe a little bike at the house, but it's not as easy as it seems, and I do understand that. But at the end of the day, we're going to save money by doing preventative medicine rather than going to the doctor when it's too late. So, I just reach out to everybody and get up off of your couch and just try, just try moving and taking out one thing, take out soda today or just don't drive through. Rather, go to the store and buy a chicken. You're better off buying a roasted chicken than driving through and picking up a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
So there's those small changes people can make. And, one day at a time, you can make small changes. And before you know it, you put together a year and your whole lifestyle's changed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's
talk about, something that's maybe seems different but might be related. Why do eating disorders seem to plague our United States? This is something you certainly do know about.
Well, I think because of what society expects. Society, you got the magazines, and you've got all these beautiful girls on these magazines, and I don't think that's ever changed. I think it's been around for thousands of years. I truly believe the woman has this image that we have to be beautiful, we need to be lean, we have to be groomed to get a man. The man needs to make money, be secure, to provide to get a woman. And that is just kind of what society has put out there. And the nice thing about the younger generation is they're not buying into it as much because they know there's Photoshop.
Yeah.
Women can get great jobs today. They don't need a man to support them. And a man doesn't need a beautiful woman. They just need a grounded woman. Men demand respect and women demand having security. And if we understand, I think, more the elements of how a man and a woman works, all the society, what society expects, isn't as important. And it happens when these girls are young. So if the mother and the father are living a healthy lifestyle, then the children have a good example. But if the mother and the father are living a distorted lifestyle, then it's very difficult for the child to grow up with a clear mind. So, you know, it's way more involved than just, you know, why do you think it is? It definitely starts in the home. I'm a true believer of that.
Okay, let's move on to something a little more uplifting. You're now training for a competition in July. Tell us what that entails.
Okay, so I'm 11 weeks out. Well, actually, it'll be 10 weeks out this Friday. I started my training 14 weeks out. My off-season was quite intense. Is when I was lifting very heavy. My calories were up to almost 3,000 calories, so I was eating a lot of food. And now we're now into pre-contest. So I'm into 3 weeks of my pre-contest. My calories are now down to 1,800 calories. My cardio has now increased to, I do 45 minutes a day, which is still not very much, but it's intense cardio. I'm doing track work, bleachers. I'm doing interval training on the bike, stairs. I do that 5-6 days a week. My lifting is a little lighter, just a little more reps. And as we keep going, we're going to start adding more cardio and taking away food as time goes on, creating a leaner body, which is kind of an illusion because as I get leaner, I'm going to look more muscular. So right now I'm weighing in at 130, and we're going to take me down to 150. So we have some work to do.
And what will your percentage body fat be then?
We're probably going to look at I'm at around 9% right now, so I'll probably come in around 5%.
Okay.
I know. It's Denise, really funny.
Denise Dinger has been my guest. She is a fitness icon, and we want to thank her for being here. Thanks, Denise.
Thank you, Patrick.
You've been listening to KUNV 91.5. This is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Cooligan. Thanks, and join us next time.